Welcome to Perception Check, the actual play D&D podcast where we sort of play D&D from time to time. We are actually in a backstory with
Erebus, otherwise known as me, Josh Cook.
Yes, so we are branching out into new territory here because something fantastic happened. We actually recorded this backstory months ago, but we had a little bit of an issue. The program I used to record our Skype conversations didn't pick up any of Josh's audio.
Which is always great.
Always great. We discussed what we were going to do about this episode. We talked about possibly just redoing the whole scenario, but there were a lot of, like, genuine reactions, and it just kind of wouldn't have the same feel if we tried to pass it off like it was the first time. So we have all of my prompts and recordings, so I'm editing it down so it's more kind of like a story, and we're just going to kind of fill in some of the gaps about what Erebus was doing, feeling during this whole type of thing, and kind of where we were going with the backstory. Josh, well, Erebus, when we were done with this, you were pretty excited about this, backstory, correct?
I was so excited, man. I had such a blast recording it, and I'm so sad that none of my audio recorded, because
yeah,
I really wanted to listen back through it, because a lot of Erebus is me in a nutshell. Yeah. And yeah. So it was a very emotional ride for me as well as for Erebus.
Mm.
And I wish that that was able to be translated into this.
Yeah, and that's going to be the shame of the whole thing, is, like, it was really choice. This whole backstory, I listened to a lot of Dio and Manowar, and looked at, like, the album covers for inspiration as I was penning this, because we wanted to tackle one very, very important thing, which was your contract with Aure.
Yeah. And we still definitely need to make sure that, like, there's some metal in there.
Oh, no. My story parts, it's all going to have music and sound effects and all that kind of
okay,
stuff.
Perfect.
It's going to be edited.
For the listeners, when we first recorded this, Corey actually, like, played, like, metal in the background so that I could get psyched for all of this. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I made sure that the atmosphere was right. You started out in the forest, and you were making a kill, a sacrifice. Do you know, like, who you were killing? I know you talked about doing, like, vagrants and stuff. Like, what is kind of Erebus's MO in these situations?
I think that at that point, still, I was still trying to be fairly discreet about it. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to make sure that I was picking off people that wouldn't be really noticed. So I was trying to pick up beggars and, you know, thieves, or mm-hmm. you know, whatever else I could find that people wouldn't really miss, because while I'm trying to feed this hunger that I had, I still didn't want to I didn't want to draw attention, and I felt horrible about this the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, this isn't something you're enjoying. Part of you is being satiated with it, but there's another part that is bearing witness to all of it, which is Erebus.
Exactly.
That is
yeah.
having to live through it at the same time as it's happening. Silence. Finally, you have silence. Erebus, you're in the woods, surrounded by bones. Your victim's scream was silenced by a killing blow. The birds fled due to the noise, but you sit in silence and it feels eerie. You have, like, your water skin, and you're kind of washing some of the blood off and kind of getting cleaned up as you are kind of jumping between these segments of going and training with your other coalition members. And this is just like any other day, and you start to get up and you start to leave, and you are frozen in place. Your your bones ache. Like, it is taking over your whole body, and in a burst of fire, you see the torso of Are come out of your chest, and she grabs your face. And she mutters in a language that most people would not be able to understand, but because you have this bond, you can hear her clearly as she says,
"Time's up."
And she snaps your neck. You fall lifeless to the ground in the middle of your little kill patch. Erebus, you are dead. In your little man-made cemetery, here your body lies. Suddenly, you feel a torrent of fire and wind as your body gets pulled through the plains by Are, and you black out while still technically awake from the pain, and you are lying face down as you come to a sudden stop, and as you kind of open your eyes, you notice that you are face down on kind of a charcoal-scorched ground, and there are veins of molten rock spider-webbing around you from your impact. Did you want to explain the deal you had with Are?
So the deal was for power. When we were originally on the boat, and with... Fuck, I can't remember his name.
Dredd.
Yeah, Captain Dredd. So when we were on the boat with Captain Dredd and I got thrown overboard, I made a deal with Are for essentially absolute power, so that I could kill him, and then he could take some of that power back.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure at that time how much of that power I would keep after the fact. I wanted him dead, and I wanted him to suffer as much as possible in the meantime.
Yeah.
And so at that point, it really wasn't... It wasn't really about anything other than making sure that he felt as much pain as possible, which I'm pretty sure he felt a lot.
Yeah, and it was all about vengeance. And with this deal that you made with this demon, it basically left a mark inside of you, a unknown mark that she could kill you and take your soul at any point. Whenever she deemed necessary. Also, that's what, story-wise, made you multi-class with Warlock.
Yep.
And it's this mark, this connection that she gave you that gives you this ability to be a Warlock, and it has also cursed you with this thirst and hunger. So, definite drawbacks to the deal. You are surrounded by a lot of smoke and cinders with a strong smell of brimstone. There is a massive wall of bones at a steep incline that goes up about 150 feet. And as you kind of look around, you can see that you do not have your coalition armor. You don't have your weapons on you. You are in kind of a ragged shirt and ragged pants that one leg is kind of torn up with holes into kind of a short on one side, and the other side's a little bit longer and kind of torn up. You look really ragged. So you just kind of have like this emptiness and chaos around you. You can see, other than the wall, bits of like charred wood and large stones creating these different craggy like mountain ranges that kind of surround on the other side. So that's what you're seeing right now. But you kind of use those to kind of scale this as bones and rib cages kind of slide underfoot as you climb up. And as you rise above, you see a massive hellscape. There are destroyed buildings and castles that litter the ground. You can see creatures and people in makeshift armor running from shelter to shelter, hiding from pursuing fiends and devils. You see many figures, demons and dragons, flying overhead, fighting or swooping down on large fights breaking out across this plain. And on the right, you see what looks like the remains of Prideborn when it collapsed into Mage's Portal. In front of you, you can see the totality of this plain, and in the far, far, far distance, a tall structure of multiple segments stacked on each other. On your left, quite a distance away, you see a large stone structure that looks broken open, almost like a box of some sort, a container. You also see lots of, like, ship parts. There's just anything you can imagine. It looks destroyed down here. There were portals popping up all over in the first season due to Mage trying to resurrect Titan. So there's a lot of fall through when he did that, especially in Prideborn. That's why you can kind of see the old castle kind of decimated in this large rubble. Some of the towers are still kind of intact. So you make your way up this hill and you witness the chaos around you as this massive war is going in the center. And you see a large container that had broke open that was covered with Eldric runes that were surrounding it. And it just looks like a really strong trap. I think you tried checking it out and you just knew that these were like containment spells. Did we ever discuss what this big container was?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, now in our story with where we are and how we know about the Wellspring and how Titan happened, the Wellspring actually took what was left of Titan after he destroyed everything. Everything was destroyed, but that kind of spirit was out there. So that container that was bust open was actually Titan's. So the Wellspring contained Titan and locked him away in the underworld, never to be seen again. But when Nicholas Mage summoned Titan, it broke him out of that container.
So this was like undead handcuffs, basically.
Yes, basically. It's kind of a Pandora's box, and Nicholas Mage, while using the added power of the eclipse, which you now know the sun is the Wellspring, and when that gets in the way of your planet and the moon, which is a world of complete essence that was destroyed, that's why magic was so different during the eclipse.
Okay.
Like, it all kind of lined up and powered up, and that's how Nicholas Mage was able to break that containment spell and bring Titan back.
That actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've had this whole thing, like, planned from so early on. Oh, man, it's been hell trying to keep the secrets.
Dude, I honestly cannot wait for, like, what's to come in all of this.
You start moving that way, and you hear a roar coming from that area, and right away, you see Aure land on one of the Prideborn towers, and she is overlooking the chaos down below, and just kind of taking interest and relaxing and watching all of these people and creatures just clash in these large groups spread all over this landscape. So she's looking that way. You're up on this wall kind of overlooking down, and you can see her kind of in the distance up on top of this tower. Can see her kind of turn and look, and it looks like she might be laughing to herself. And you see her kind of move over and jump down more into the ruins of Prideborn, kind of on ground level. So you run after down this wall towards the castle when you get close, and you can see that there's still there's big openings, and you can make out Aure down at ground level, kind of walking around, looking around, and she looks up at you and is kind of looking at you as you're approaching. You can feel this anger that you have towards her, and you feel something kind of just into your hand, and it is your soulbound Bladerang. Do you remember what you chose to do in that situation?
I am running, flying, skipping, jumping after her as fast as humanly fucking possible. I shouldn't say humanly, dragonbornly as possible.
Yes, and in this rage upon seeing Aure, your Bladerang appears because it is a soul-bound weapon, and this is your soul, basically. Not basically, it is. It's your soul in hell. So that still wound up appearing to you, which was nice. My question is, why do you go after Aure, even though you are definitely outmatched and have, like, no armor. What's going on with Erebus in that moment?
I think more than anything else, that's just his, like, humanity taking over. And, like, regardless of whether I live through this or not, she has to die.
Yeah.
And
so
not
any means
die
necessary.
Like she did in the school, but, like, she has to be gone. I have to do something to try and end whatever this is.
Big fight in the remains of Prideborn, but you start the fight poorly, and you get knocked down. She wraps you up with her whip and trips you, and you're able to kick the whip off and toss the bladering twice at her. Not the best start to a fight. I think you hit her a couple times. And then she creates an elemental, a giant fire elemental that's about 4 stories tall, I believe I say. And she retreats, trying to escape. And you do try to chase after her, but the elemental's, like, stopping you. It's getting in the way as she's taking off.
This was not the ideal fight for Erebus. I was severely outmatched and also rolling horribly.
it was not going great. The fire elemental is going to move its distance to try and follow you. It grabs a chunk of the Prideborn castle and lifts it up. And it reaches back to toss this big old thing at you. And then you hear an explosion, kind of. Not necessarily an explosion, like the initial igniting of an explosion, as this loud boom kind of rings out. And you see the fire elemental kind of stop as this blast hits it, and you see it kind of freeze up. Ice starts to take over from the side it was hit, and you see it become this solid block of ice. And then you hear 3 more booms as these large projectiles kind of fire over this debris and hit this fire elemental and shatter it to pieces. And you feel a rumble as out of this debris of the Prideborn Castle, a large mass of rocks explode out like it was a crazy amount of dynamite stuffed into this thing, and you see the head of a purple worm, and it kind of turns and it looks right at you, and then you start hearing some more rumbling, and there's another explosion of rock, and there's another purple worm, and they both kind of look at you, and then you hear what sounds like shouting, and these 2 purple worms kind of drag themselves out of this thing, and you see they have these large makeshift harnesses with these massive ropes leading back through the debris, and crashing through this wall of Prideborn, you see a gigantic hodgepodge thrown together ship, like a sailing ship, but it has a flat bottom and it's being dragged by these 2 incredibly massive purple worms on either side due to these rope harnesses that look like they go up to the deck. You hear a voice yell, "Found him!" And they say, "Lower the ramp!" And you hear the ship clank a few times and see it shudder, but a rope falls quickly and you see a large figure swing down and land, and he looks up and says, "Son?" What were your thoughts when this big old ship appeared and you have your dad staring you down?
You know, from the first backstory, I honestly never thought that I would see my dad again.
Mm-hmm.
And
then it made you kill him.
It was, yeah, in the final fight. Mm. Which, I mean, like, at that point, like, I knew that, you know, in the fight with Titan and everything, I knew that that wasn't my dad anymore. Like, it was his face and body and everything, but, like, that wasn't him anymore. So that was less hard. But seeing, like, actually him was sort of horrifying and also relieving at the same time. Like, you know, maybe I have some backup down here. But also, like, I can't believe that you're here and not in a better place, you know, like a lot of strong emotions in that space, because, you know, I know that my dad is now in hell and not, you know, in a better place, or, you know, sitting relaxing on a beach or something. He's in hell fighting for his life for the end of eternity, you know?
Yeah. And he goes, "Oh my God, Erebus." And he runs over to you. He runs up to you and he grabs you by the shoulders and he goes, I can't believe it. We all heard your name as you came here. I can't, what happened? Why are you here?" And he goes, "Erebus, God damn it. Like, why would you make a deal?" When you're first meeting, he's definitely curious on why you're there. And he asks you why you decided to make the deal.
Revenge more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think at that point in time when I made that deal, there was nothing else going through my mind other than just revenge.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he killed my whole crew. He nearly killed me.
Mm-hmm.
He killed sons and fathers and had no remorse at all going forward. And it was something that needed to be done, and in the most brutal way that I could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was kind of a... nothing's going to stop this guy unless I can pull this off.
Pretty much. I mean, that's the whole reason I wagered my soul to be able to do it, you know?
Yeah. He kind of stares at you, and he kind of has a look of sadness that you're here, but also kind of happy that you're here. And a massive ramp drops from the ship. Crew of 40 people come down, and a lot of these people you just do not recognize. But you do see one person kind of push through the crowd and run up, and he goes, "Oh my God." And it's Oddly. And he goes, "I can't... Captain, what... Oh my goodness, I can't believe it." And then through the crowd you also see Gordo. And he's looking spry in comparison to when you last saw him with his injured leg. And Willett, the dwarf who tried to untie you, comes out as well. And Slade, the one who saved your painting, they all come out as part of this crew. And they're like, "Captain!" And they're super excited to see you. Well, you get to reunite with your dad, but that's not all, because you also get to reunite with old shipmates, Oddly, Gordo, etc. There's a couple other ones that I don't have the names on me right now, but when we last saw them, it was in your first backstory. How does that feel, being reunited with your old team?
You know, it's very relieving to be able to see them again, but mm-hmm. also in the same stretch. You know, they're also in hell.
Yeah.
And, which, I mean, makes sense for what we did, but...
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely hard to, you know, hindsight, it's 2020, you know, I guess we all fucked up a bunch, but, you know, I wish you were all in a better place.
Yeah. And from your backstory, each of these people kind of sacrifice themselves for your sake. So did Erebus really carry any of that with him, kind of like maybe some sort of guilt, or like maybe even kind of angry at them for making those decisions?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the backstory, I was pissed mm-hmm. that so many people had to die for me to be able to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my backstory is, the way that I built it, is that there was a lot of sacrifice, but it was... Even then, it was really hard to go through that backstory and realize how many people needed to die for me to live. And It was incredibly humbling that there were so many people willing to do so.
And to top it all off, once you make your way onto the ship, you actually see your old captain, who you got your first ship from, and your ring behind the wheel. And there were two wheels controlling each worm. And he says, look how you've grown.
That was probably the hardest thing I have yet to do. Like, killing my dad in the...
Yeah.
In the final fight with Titan was hard. Killing my captain,
mm-hmm.
just so that I could take his ship and not have some other dumbass take it, was his basically dying wish. That was killer yeah. for me. Like, that was yeah. absolutely heartbreaking.
So now your dad's like, all right, why don't you keep us along the border of the perimeter so no one kind of comes and messes with us, and I'll take him into the captain's quarters and I'll kind of fill him in on what this all is. And captain says, all right, and keeps steering the ship. Oddly comes up and takes over on the other wheel. And you and your dad walk into this makeshift captain's quarters and kind of sit down at this desk. And he tells you,
I'm sure you have a lot of questions. I should be able to answer most of them.
How did you die?
And he goes,
memory's a little foggy on that. And he goes, I found something.
I saw you in the Titan War. We fought, and I had to kill you.
And he goes, huh. I don't remember fighting you or anything like that. Huh. It's a hell of a thing. Well, all I remember is that I found something in an island of myth and legend, and I can't remember a whole lot. When we were forced up to do battle on your plane, it's not you up there. My soul is here contained. And mage's portals turned souls into solid material, but the transition left us basically brain dead, just instinct alone. And after coming back, you're not the same. A lot gets damaged. So I'm a little bit weaker. My memories are a little foggy. I can remember your mother, but a lot of things in between I've lost.
And he goes,
I suppose you're probably wondering how we found you.
And he's like,
this place is pretty interesting. It's you find out it's not necessarily for just bad people. It's for powerful people. Strength, mind, or ingenuity, it feeds off of death and pain and suffering. The more you take, the weaker you become. So it chooses to catch the souls that will last longest or create the most suffering. And how I find you is as simple as just knowing.
And at this moment, in your mind, you feel the name Grimly Chessmere pop up. And you know he landed somewhere near some of the ship ruins you saw earlier. And he kind of looks at you and he goes, did
you just think of Grimly? And he goes, yeah, anyone who dies and comes here, their info goes instantly to all of us. So if we ever have a feud with Grimly, we can go after him and have easy cause to create some chaos. Your friend reconnected with your old captain, and when I came down, they found me. We banded together to skirt the outside and try to stay above the fray. I just can't believe you're here.
He kind of looks at you and he leans back in his chair and kind of like rubs his face and he goes,
now, all right.
And he goes,
you have a mark, Erebus. Demons make deals to force those who may be noble to come here. It's not all just bad people down here, but it does help. You said you got yourself into making a deal, so you didn't drown?
And he kind of nods, and he's like, hey, I
can understand that.
And he's like,
now, with this demon, I heard if you kill your owner, this Aray for you, you are actually set free from their bond, so they can't complete any sort of contract or deal or anything like that. That's torn up.
And he goes,
I may have an idea to get you out of this, but it's going to be risky.
And he kind of smiles at you, and we cut to the top deck of this ship. You can oversee this whole landscape as they're going kind of behind some large kind of craggy mountains. It looks like they're doing exactly what he said. They have the ship and they kind of go around the borders. Obviously, they've picked up some people that they've known or anyone who wants to be a part of this crew. And they can kind of defend themselves as a team after harnessing these couple purple worms that have found their way down there and staying out of the massive thing. So that way they don't have to be a part of it. And you're on top of this deck and you're all surrounded on a table, and your old captain, who I don't think we ever named. Now, this is one of my favorite moments of this backstory, is we actually name your old captain. Do you remember what name you chose?
Fuck no.
You chose Kerchief.
Kerchief?
Yeah. It was something you saw in the room at the time.
Like a handkerchief?
Yeah.
fantastic.
and we rolled with it. Alright, so Captain... I'm guessing you saw a kerchief somewhere. And Captain Kerchief kind of looks around and yells and he goes, "Pay attention, you dogs! We have a bounty we need to cash in on. The target is the demon Alre. It'll be a bitch to bring her down, but when we do, Erebus, you have to get the final blow. That's the only way that you can break that bond." And he kind of looks around and he says, "Then it's a waiting game." And you all hear the name Starling Vander. And you look out at a woman standing on the wall of bones as she's overlooking kind of the same as you were doing, Erebus. She's looking across at the big battles. You can kind of see that this huge crowd that's down there, they're still just fighting. No one's blinking an eye. They're just still hashing it out. Captain Kerchief kind of stares at her and he goes, "Now to see if she was with a party." A few moments pass and a blue portal opens up next to her. And you look in horror as the battle below stops and every single creature in the air and on land is sprinting full force to her location. And he says, "If someone is getting rezzed from here, we all know it." And he goes, "Erebus, ever wonder how spirits and undead can appear without necromancy?" And he goes, "It's the sprint. 1 minute the portal stays open. That soul has to choose to go or stay, but anything else that gets through gets a second chance." He's like, "Just hope your body is still in good shape and you'll be crawling out of dirt to be a spirit if it's destroyed." And everyone kind of laughs, which is a pretty grim, dark joke for everyone to be laughing. And he goes, "Now getting pulled back can actually be slow going. It can't be interrupted or you don't go." And he's like, "All of this is easy compared to your demon. We are on her turf, so she'll be a lot stronger than on your home plane. So hit and hit hard." And he goes, "So that's the plan. We need to find Alre. We need to take her down. We need to play a bit of a waiting game and hope someone shows up and someone's rezzing them so we can get you, Erebus, to a portal and get you back into your home plane." And he takes out a dagger and he stabs it into the table. And he goes, "Y'all with me?" And everyone yells yes and slams a dagger into the table as well. So, being able to fight with your old crew and your dad, how does that feel? I mean, granted, you're in hell, and you're fighting for your soul, but at the same time, you're side by side with old shipmates and your dad actually getting to fight.
Yeah, I mean, I never really fought side by side with my dad. You know, I mean, when I left the ship, I was pretty young still, and I was more a crew hand than anything else. And so I think it was very humbling and nostalgic to be able to fight side by side with him and, you know, with a lot of my old crew that were, you know, giving themselves to death on my cause.
Okay, so your crew, using some of the materials that have been down there, they actually take you below deck a couple rows, and they hook you up with a shield, as well as some kind of makeshift armor. It's going to keep your AC at about 18, but it'll help absorb some types of damages if it comes to that. And they all kind of, you guys kind of spend some time huddling around trying to put together a game plan, and your dad kind of is thinking and is quiet for a while as everyone's discussing, like, you know, if we charge him from this angle, if we got a bead on her, this may be the best way to do it. And your dad's kind of sitting there, and he finally leans in, and everyone kind of stops talking and looks at him, and he goes,
"You know, if we're going to do this..."
And he kind of smiles and he's like,
"Let's go big or go home."
And everyone kind of smiles around the table. So, now we are going to cut from your location. And a couple hours pass. And we cut to the middle of this big old field of ruins and destruction where millions upon millions of people are all just clashing. There's dragons, beasts, demons, fiends, devils, all just in this massive melee. Because when you're down here, as time goes, and the more you get injured, and if you die, you don't necessarily die. You come back, but worse. And this is basically just madness and chaos all in the center of this large plane. And one thing your dad does tell you is that demons are different because they have ownership of this plane in a small part. They're not the big owners, but they do have ownership on this plane. So if they decide to kill you, that's final. But if you are killed by any of these other people that come down, any of these people that were claimed, you come back worse. But a demon can decide to make it final if they want. So we're in the middle of this massive sprawling battle that is taking up the majority of this plane. And we see the Guildmaster from the Assassin's Guild in an almost endless crowd cutting people down, while taking shots of magic missile in his side, and he looks around panting, and he is suddenly crushed by an ancient gold dragon as it falls on its side, clinging barely to consciousness on top of it. Clinging barely to consciousness, and on top of this gold dragon sits Aure, punching massive holes into the chest of it. And Aure flaps her wings and floats up above this battle and surveys the landscape as she laughs, taking this in. Then she gives an ungodly wail as a soft rumble permeates the air. The battle sounds slow as some stop to listen to what's going on, when all of a sudden there is an explosion of rock as two giant purple worms burst from below, flinging hundreds. Aure flies backwards, smiling at the show of chaos, but following the worms, like cresting a tidal wave, a massive ship is pulled up onto the battlefield. Jets of fire stream from the worms as they dominate the crowds around them, and an ancient bronze dragon comes out of the crowd and latches onto the left worm and starts biting it on its side, and it wiggles trying to get a good look at the dragon, but it's at kind of a blind spot. And then an adult gold dragon lands on the back of the captain's quarters of the ship. So you guys burst out in the middle of this battlefield in epic display. Your dad and Captain Kerchief are at the wheel. The rest of your crew is armed. You do have battle cones. There is a large mast with rigging at the top of the ship. It's kind of crusty and a little bit busted up, so you're kind of in between these two wheels. And this large gold dragon is now clasped on the back of your ship, kind of staring at all of you guys, roaring at you. You actually get to go first. There are crowds of people like rushing your ship at the bottom and kind of just hacking away because they don't really have any other thing to do besides hack away at this ship. You have a purple worm that is being attacked by a dragon. You have another purple worm who's just rolling back and forth, just crushing people and eating them and knocking them distances and launching fire breath everywhere. and you have this big-ass dragon on the back of your ship, kind of glaring down at you, ready to fight. So you launch this grappling hook, and it wraps around the neck. So you wrap it around the neck, wrap it around a railing, and jump down, and you pull this dragon's head to the ground as it smashes onto the back of the captain's deck, kind of caving it in. Like I said, this is a pretty shitty ship put together. Oddly did it, obviously. Master improvisationalist. He helped you build rafts. So a lot of this stuff is his work. And the dragon drops down. Next up, we're going to call that your action. Okay, so you do that, and up next is the ship. So you guys have about 3 layers of battle cones on either side that go about 6 across. So you have a ton of battle cones, and there are people on each one firing shots. The bottom 2 levels are firing shots below into the crowd as you see massive explosions of these amped up magic missile and amped up fireball exploding all around you and bodies flying. But the top layer all spin their cones around to the dragon, who is now prone, and they are going to do 185 damage as they just unload on this dragon, who is basically prone, trapped to the back of this thing. It gets lit up and it still kind of roars. It's still got a little bit of kick left in it. And it's going to be the dragon's turn. While laying his head down, he is going to shoot his fire breath towards the captain's wheels. Takes a breath, it starts to exhale, and you like put your feet on like the side of the ship and just pull. And you pull the dragon's head around, and it goes off of the ship into the crowd of people fighting, and it just leaves this line of just devastation as you see these explosions go all around you. And then after that, it is Oddly's turn, and you see Oddly go, "Oh shit!" And he runs over to the rigging, and he takes one of the mast ropes, and he's kind of pulling on it, and Gordo comes over and helps him, and they kind of move the rope over to where you are, Erebus, and they're like, "Erebus, toss me the rope." Okay, Oddly catches it and connects it to the rigging rope for the mast, and he lets go, and the mast drops, yanking on the rope and ripping and breaking the dragon's head along with it as the rope pulls up. So the gold dragon's dead. Large fiends in the crowd below have been hacking away at the ship, and you can feel it kind of shift and balance as it kind of starts to crumble beneath itself as they're ripping off boards, and you see these large fiends on the back of these like undead animals just charging into it, and they run through one side and out of the other on the bottom as your ship kind of starts to collapse, and you start to understand that the ship probably isn't going to move. Aure is up above kind of looking at everything, and she turns and starts to fly away from here, and Captain Kerchief yells, "Abandon ship! Onto Buttercup!" And you see your whole crew run and jump off the ship onto one of the purple worms that doesn't have the dragon on it. And I think maybe you give Captain Kerchief a look, and he's like, "I like the name Buttercup." So you jump onto the back of this purple worm. So it's you, your captain, your old crew, and your dad, because they're kind of leading this whole charge. You jump onto the back of this worm, and your dad cuts all the ropes, and you see a lot of your crew kind of up on the side looking as this worm starts taking off towards Aure. And your dad kind of shouts back, and he's like, "Sorry," and he's like, "Fight to your last breath." And they all turn and take out swords, and they start scaling down the sides of the ship and still using cones that they can manage, blasting at the crowd. Alright, so you see a lot of the cones turn and they start going towards this other dragon. The purple worm's looking in pretty rough shape, but the fight is continuing with that one. You guys are giving chase, and as well as a crowd of people coming after you, lots of devils and fiends, and a bunch of them jump up on the side of the worm as you're giving chase, and from the back of the worm, a horned devil and a chain devil climb to the top and they pull out swords. So you guys are speeding along, chasing Aure on this purple worm, and now you have these two devils staring you down on the back of it. First up is your dad. Oddly goes over, and with the bit of rope that they still have, Captain Kerchief is on top of the worm, kind of pulling a dune, and is kind of steering it, and Oddly's helping him out. But your dad and Gordo come up next to you, and a couple other people are helping kind of steer the worm, because now it's pretty hard. And your dad goes first, and he is going to go after the horned devil. And he charges over with a sword, and he swings once, hitting it across the chest. And after he swings, he turns and with his tail hits him and knocks him back 5 feet more towards the edge of the worm and just roars at him. Next up is the chain devil. Has a large flaming chain. And he is going to swing at your dad, who just hit his friend. He swirled it around. Your dad nimbly dodges the chain, kind of ducks under it as it swings overhead. And so he tries swinging it back around again to hit him, and that's going to fail as well. So your dad is parrying beautifully. And you know what? We'll say he riposts. So he did about 18 damage to the chain devil. All right, now it is your turn. Your lowest is a 20. Yeah, those are all going to hit. Yeah, so you nail them. Why don't you roll some damage? You hit the one that was closest to the edge, and it goes flying backwards off of the worm, and you see him hit the ground and roll, and his sword kind of flies up in the air, and your dad reaches out over the worm and catches it. You hit the other one and knock it 20 feet over, and it goes flying off as well, and it kind of tumbles down the side of the worm and hits a couple people that were crawling up and knocks them down off of the side as well. And after that, it is Gordo's turn, and he kind of tosses a rope to you, Erebus, and he says, hold on tight. Give me a strength check. 11, all right. He jumps down the right side of this worm where there's a bunch of people crawling up, and he is hanging on this rope with a club, and he's smacking these fiends and devils that are trying to climb up to fight you guys off of the edge, and he gets about four of them off, but one of them hits him, and the extra pull of being hit, the rope falls out of your hands, and Gordo hits the ground, and you see him roll away in the distance. He pops back up and kind of charges at the nearest thing and starts fighting again. So we'll just say he's going a bit too fast for you to do that. But he's still fighting away because he's Gordo and he's awesome. All right, so you guys are on top of this worm and you are gaining on Aure as she is trying to take off. You get close enough underneath, and as more creatures come up, your dad takes both of his swords now and starts just wrecking shop. He uses a cone of cold to kind of freeze up some of the demons and shatters one with one hit and knocks another one off with another. And he just starts decimating all these hop-ons. Captain Kerchief kind of looks back and he goes, Erebus! And he looks up as you guys are getting, you're really close, almost underneath Aure, and he goes, time to use those wings. So what do? You guys collide in the air, and you are basically close quarters, kind of corkscrewing through the air. So go ahead and roll a dexterity check. 18. Okay, she rolled a strength check of 8 as she tries to swing at you as you're kind of grappling and doing this close quarters combat as you're flying through the air. And you kind of move out of the way. Roll a strength check. 14. Okay, that's going to beat her dexterity, and you clock her in the head. And that's going to give you an extra move. What do you want to try to do? All right, when you use luck, you feel like a cold chill. So you are able to access your swords and kind of kick off a little bit from Aure and then flap your wings and go charge in, and you pin her to the ground by her wings with both of your swords. And Aure lands, and you can hear her kind of screaming in pain. And as you kind of stand up, there's no other people really around you guys. You're kind of facing off on your own. Aure kind of pulls herself up and yanks her body and her wings up through the swords, and it actually pulls her wings off. And she roars in pain as she takes 50 damage. But you see her take out her whip in one hand and a sword in the other. But at that point, you wind up getting close enough to Aure that you jump off of the purple worm and you fly up and you actually engage in an aerial battle, sort of, with Aure. And I think you wind up deciding to take out her wings.
I think so. I think with the limited amount of resources that I had, I thought that the wings were the best option. I still do. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20. If I could go back, I would probably do it a little bit differently. But I think I did a pretty good job of going for blood right off the bat. I mean, obviously, at that point, being in hell, I wasn't screwing around anymore. A lot of the times when I'm in fights, I try and pull my punches, and especially more recently, I'm trying to think my way through things. But in this, I was just going for blood, man.
A 19, a 16, and a nat 20. Okay, so the 19 will hit. You tied. The 16 won't. And the nat 20, do you want to affect attack, defense, or movement? Attack. Okay. Launch these three bolts. One kind of goes past her. She kind of moves. And another one hits her. And as she gets up, she holds up her sword to kind of like try to block it. And it shatters through the sword and destroys her sword and hits her for the crit damage. So go ahead and roll damage. Her sword is gone. Total of 28. Beautiful. Okay. She disappears and she pops back in up behind you, and she's going to make a whip attack for your neck. So 15 damage. It is now your turn. You now have a flaming rope around your neck. Yeah, okay, you cut the whip. Aure kind of looks a little bit confused as you cast this. And then it's her turn, and so she kind of takes a step back and drops the handle of her whip and reaches out a hand and casts a massive fireball. Would normally do a 20-foot radius, but it will do a 40-foot radius. And we will do... you need to do a dexterity save. 13, that will not do it. That will be 53 damage. And you can hear cackling. It is now your turn. What do you do? So you guys trade massive blows. And, well, she's bloodied. So, she is prone. She looks over at you, and she kind of wiggles around, but she points a finger at you. She casts Finger of Death. You will just barely save, so you're going to take half damage. Okay, so you are going to take 49 points of damage. That is the half. It is now your turn after that monumental blast. You hit her so hard with that crit, it shakes her up, so her next attack will have disadvantage. She'll have disadvantage for three turns. So she's going to stand up with a little bit of blood pouring from her mouth. And she is going to Incendiary Cloud. It's not a ton of fun. Roll a dexterity save. Nat 20. All right. Since it's a nat, you're not going to take half damage on it. It's a complete miss. Okay, interesting. So there's just this fiery cloud sitting there now. In some rough shape. You're getting there. All right, so on her turn, she takes those blasts and kind of steadies herself, and she flicks her wrist and moves the cloud over to you again. So I need another dexterity check. That will not do it. Okay, that will be a save, so you'll take half damage. At half damage, 47. All right. You get blown up in a cloud of fire. Dying. That's basically your reaction. And there's almost, I would say, a peace in this death. Erebus had kind of a good run. And the last thing you feel is another shiver of cold. So, Erebus, you died, man. And you find yourself in a white light. And you hear a voice say, You always were lucky. And a figure approaches you. She says, Well, when you were little. And it is your mother. And she's smiling at you. And she goes, Erebus, how are you? She goes, When your soul lays to rest, you are granted a wish to leave in the world. You can speak with a loved one, grant a boost to a friend, or leave a weapon with your grace imbued into it. And she goes, Mine was to grant you luck. I saw what you became after dread, and it frightens me. Erebus, it frightens your friends. You were taught to be fearless, be strong, and grow in power and earn your legacy. And she kind of looks at you for a moment and she says, now is the time where you get to choose. You can continue on this dark path and keep destroying your connections or use the power you gain to protect those who care about you. And she kind of looks at you. But even still, Aure gets one over on you, and you are actually killed.
Yeah, which was a huge shock to me, because I thought I was doing really well up until that point.
Yeah, but this led to one of my more important moments that I wanted you to have as a character, where you got to meet your mother.
I did. And that was, like, tear-jerking for me.
Mm-hmm.
We really haven't talked a whole lot about my mother other than the fact that I have her from my dad's ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was my lucky charm, man.
Yep. So, going back, whenever your character got the luck trait is when she decided to move on. And bless you with that, because she thought you needed it. And she goes, I understand. And she goes, Erebus, my gift was luck, especially in your darkest hour. And I guess I am that luck today. And she comes over and embraces you. And then holds onto your shoulders and stares at you really hard, very serious. And she goes, now why don't we show that Black Hearts will never be a fucking slave? You come too. You are hovering off of the ground horizontally as Aure's kind of staring at you with a little bit of shock. And there is a radiant glow about you. And your eyes don't look like your normal eyes. They are glowing with radiant light as this ethereal smoke is coming off of your body. And you land back on your feet, and in your head, you hear... Hold on, I didn't write down a name for this. I didn't get to that point. Toby Smithward. That's a stupid name. But anyway, you hear that, and you know that they landed about 1,500 feet away from you. And as you stand there, you face down Aure with this strength of feeling, and like your mom is there with you. Your health and spells are back. What do you do? Okay, and you turn into this radiant glowing T-Rex, and your eyes are shimmering, and you have this glow about you. All right, you cast Polymorph. I'm guessing that would be your action. So you turn into a T-Rex. Now, once you do this, it isn't Aure's turn. It is not your turn still. After you polymorph into this T-Rex and let out a triumphant roar, you see this ethereal ghost of your mother jump forward, spinning through the air, and punch Aure in the face. Aure's cheek turns into a white ash of cinder as it kind of explodes on impact and starts to kind of blow away, and Aure lets out a shriek of fear, and you see this ghost of your mother go back into your body. So now it's Aure's turn, and this hit did a lot of damage. As she tries to react, Aure holds up a hand to cast a spell, and I'm going to give you a reaction. No, you can do whatever you want. Like, whatever you want to do. Okay, she lifts up her arm, and go ahead and roll. So you bite down on Aure, and you lift her up, and you can see these bite marks, this white ash, these coals kind of form around these bite marks as Aure shrieks, and you see the ghost of your mother kind of run up your back and jump off your head and just drop a knee onto Aure's face while she's hanging out of your mouth, and you see another white spot as Aure shrieks in horror. Aure is going to try to pry the jaws open, and that's a nat 20. So she's able to kind of pry your jaws open and kind of fall out, but she lands on the ground, and that turn's basically going to be over. What do you do? So you go for another bite, and you pick her up, and you're just like ravaging, shaking her back and forth as you see one of Aure's legs fly off and disappear into a white ash. You bite her in half, and Aure's upper half kind of lands, and you see her kind of crawling. And the one thing I really wanted to do was have you fight with your mom for like one last time, or for a first time. So every move you did, like, her spirit would project out of you and also do something.
Yeah, it was like, fuck, I wish we had that audio.
I know, it was really good. You did have last words for Aure after you kind of channeled all of this energy your mother gave you into your sword and killed Aure. Do you remember even remotely what your last words were?
This contract is null and void moving forward. I'm going to keep the power that you've given me. And you will bother me no longer. And when my soul is ready, I'll let you know.
As you do this, a couple things happen. You stab your sword down and you start dragging it through, and you can feel all this radiant light that is within you go down into the sword. And as you drag it, it sets off a series of explosions down its path that you're unmoved by. You're standing in the middle of this chaos as, like, these bombs are going off around you, just decimating, disintegrating Aure. And as you're doing this, you get a ping in the back of your head, and you look up, and you can see a portal open for whatever that fucking name was I made up. and you see these crowds rushing in towards this portal, but you see your crewmates and your dad and Captain Kerchief surrounding the portal, creating a circle, and they're fending off all of these creatures as they're trying to get their way to it, and they have created a circle for you. What do? You take off, and you feel, as you get closer and closer, a spear is coming up at you. Roll a dexterity. So you're able to kind of spin out of the way as it goes over, as you approach the circle, and you land in the middle of it, right next to this portal, which has about 30 seconds left. And your dad's in the circle, and he saw everything that happened, and he kind of turns, and he looks back, and he goes,
it was your mom.
And he goes,
I know there's a reason I married her. Now get in that fucking portal.
As he spins back around and hits a large undead orc. All right, so you walk in, and it kind of goes slow for you. It feels super slow, like you going into this portal and being resurrected is very slow, while everything else is happening very quickly around you. And you can see Oddly fall. and get run through as he kind of lands, and as the crowd starts to break in, your dad wheels back around and launches another cone of cold and freezes up a bunch of them so they're not able to reach the portal, and the portal starts closing, and you can see these armies gradually take down all of these people that were protecting this portal for you as they get ever so closer. But just before they can reach, it snaps closed. With an exasperated breath, you are looking up into trees. You are prone, you're sweating, you feel like you were hit by a truck. You're surrounded by bones, and another feeling aside from feeling just like hammered shit, you feel a freedom of not having this mark on you anymore. Your contract is broken and you're back into your body, because your body was pretty much unscathed except for like a broken neck, but when your soul went back into it, your body was fine. You're not flopping around or anything. And you are in basically your murder forest where there's a bunch of bones and a new body. Do you remember what you do?
I think I tried to bury everything.
Yes, you found a cave, yeah. I believe, and you kind of tossed everything in there, and you used a spell to create... Didn't you, like, grow a bunch of plants around everything?
Yeah, I think I used a, like, druid spell that I had picked up in, that was in my spell book to basically, like, nourish the ground for a year, I think is the, like, the spell description. And also it makes all of the plants flourish for, I think, a year. So basically I covered my tracks as best as I could in plants.
So you kind of look at your cover-up, basically. I think you feel a sense of relief as well as exhaustion. You can still kind of feel a little bit of an itch in the back of your throat, but not nearly as bad as it has been, and the sun is rising. And this all happened way back when you guys were still investigating the book written by the Pillars, so the Book of Essence.
Yeah.
And you and River were spending time at the keep studying the book, and Geralt would show up every once in a while. But you guys would kind of be in and out, and you were gone for one of the days, and you kind of showed up the next day looking like you'd been through hell, because you had
literally.
but you just kind of brushed it off and didn't really tell anyone what was going on, so you just kind of kept studying the book as usual.
I think I was still pretty afraid at that point to show that side of myself, because I didn't really understand at that point, you know, even in my own mind, and it was definitely hard for me to keep that from everyone, but I also knew that I couldn't just be like, hey, I murdered a bunch of people. So, like, you know, what else do you do?
Yeah.
You create your own murder forest. Lesson learned.
Okay. Yeah, and there's, you know, you never know how people are going to react. I mean, jumping to, you know, how could you, instead of like, well, why was this happening? But, you know, we get to all that, and there are some twists and turns ahead in episodes that I'm really excited for everyone to hear. But that pretty much wraps up your backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you guys for listening. Super bummed that we missed out on all those details, and we lost some recording. Anyway, I think that's where we'll end that.